Ready to come to order on state government finance. It's June 29th, 2006. It is 1:37 in the afternoon. The clerk will note the roll. A quorum is present. Good afternoon, everyone who's here. The committee is meeting today just to exercise some oversight functions from a bill that has passed through this committee and was part of the pension process and one of the two bills that had passed this last session. The chair decided to call a hearing mainly out of concern over liquidating trust that was set up immediately after the bill was passed, before governor's signature, so it was actually an act, I guess, which is a bill that passes the legislature but not yet signed by the governor. For those of you who are interested in legislative terminology, that's what an act is. So while it was an act, a trust was set up, and committee members, including myself, have some concerns about this. The process, we did contact the state auditor's office after reading some media reports. She was gracious enough to oblige in coming in today. And we would like to start with the state auditor to give us a little overview of why the trust may be objectionable and to give us an idea of where we may be going from here. And then we'd also like to hear from some other folks that will be calling up accordingly. Our intention is to finish today by 3:30, and we'll have members ask questions of the witnesses as they are at the stand rather than holding everyone to the end. So we'd have the testifiers come up to their testimony, and then at the end of their testimony, we'll open it up for member questions, then we'll bring up the next testifier and go accordingly. Then at the end, when we have other people come forward, I believe Mr. Heffelfinger is here, who would like to speak on behalf of the trust. And we also have Mr. Bicker here regarding the transfer of assets, just how that's going and how that's working out or not working out, etc. Okay. We have Lori Hacking here, the TRA director, who has some thoughts on the liquidating trust. And then if we have concerns or questions for Mr. Martin from the pension commission, we'll also have Mr. Martin come up forward, and then anyone else that members of the committee would like to have come up, we will have be able to call up witnesses as well. Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, can we then have a question period at the end because something may come up on
a
testifier that we don't think a question
correct
of them later?
Yes, we will have an overall Q&A at the end for anyone in the audience that's at least willing to testify. If we can kind of make notes as we go along, that'd be very helpful. So first we would ask if State Auditor Pat Anderson could come forward and just give us a little overview of objections to the liquidating trust. This is generally where most of us had gotten the media reports from, was the auditor's initial attempt to get some information and then some follow-up with that. So this afternoon we have Auditor Anderson with us. Madam Auditor, welcome to the committee. If you could give your name and position for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Pat Anderson, the State Auditor. If I can, I'd like to just give a little quick timeline. You do have a lot of the documents in your packets, but just to give you some idea and put this into, because lots happened in the last month. I want to go back to April 11th, which is the day that this committee heard the Minneapolis teachers merger bill. On that date, April 11th, there was an amendment to the bill that was passed by this committee. I believe, I don't remember what the vote was, I think it was fairly unanimous, that added some language which essentially stated that the merger, all of the assets would be pushed or would be sent to TRA as of June 30th of this year, and the Minneapolis Teachers Board would no longer exist. Also in that language, it stated that from the time of passage by the legislature until June 30th, the Minneapolis Teachers Fund Board could no longer enter into any contracts without approval of TRA. So TRA essentially became a fiduciary at that time, at the time that this bill was passed. That language was added in your committee on April 11th. It was language that had been worked out with the authors, with TRA, with the State Board of Investment. Everyone thought it was very doable, and again, they're here, and they can testify to that effect if you'd like. As the merger went through the legislative process, it was passed on May 21st. On May 22nd, that's the date that this trust was put into place. So it was one day after passage by the legislature. And again, the language in the bill said that from the time of passage, which would include then the governor signing the bill, through June 30th, that TRA or Minneapolis teachers could not enter into any contracts. Of course, there was a gap of 5 days between the time you passed it and the time that the governor signed the bill on June 26th. During that time, that's when this trust was put into place. That's when the money was transferred into the trust fund, $1.5 million taken out. Now, we were informed, we and not only my office, but also the Attorney General's office, FBI, and TRA themselves were informed by Minneapolis Teachers Board's attorneys and the trust attorneys on June 1st that this had happened. So this is 4 days later after the governor signed the bill. A group of us met and on June 7th, TRA passed a resolution that, I don't know if you have a copy of the resolution. Bob, does, if you don't, maybe they have copies. Okay. Do you want it? Now? Have enough copies?
Luther, do you have some handouts that we would like passed out?
Okay. I can save that too. I don't want to.
No, that's fine. We'll take a look at that while you're going. Okay. Go ahead and proceed.
The TRA board passed this resolution, which you're about to get a copy of, essentially directing the Attorney General's office on their behalf to go and get the $1.5 million, which rightfully would belong to TRA and to the pensioners. There was a little bit of negotiating time between the Attorney General's office and the lawyers for the trust fund, I understand. And on Monday, June 19th, Minneapolis Teachers Board and the trust funds filed a lawsuit against the state of Minnesota, essentially seeking court approval of their trust. They wanted to legitimize their trust through the court system. That was filed on Monday, June 19th. On June 20th, Tuesday, June 20th, the state, on TRA's behalf, through the Attorney General's office, countersued, seeking, well, answering that claim, but also countersued to have the trust fund dissolved. And so you have all this that happened, again, within about 3 weeks time frame. That's also the date that my office went in seeking documents, June 20th. So they were done on the same date. You've read the media reports. You know what happened with my staff. I can tell you that by noon the second day, they did get us the documents. So we ended up having to go in with a subpoena to get what we needed, and they did deliver the documents by noon on the second day. Today is June 29th. According to your legislation, the Minneapolis Teachers Board has one more day to exist. They will be done on June 30th, I believe at the end of business day on June 30th. And at that time, the Minneapolis Teachers Board will no longer exist. What will exist, however, is this this trust fund. And there's $1.5 million that we know of sitting in this trust fund. That money is pensioners' money. If you track it back, that money belongs to TRA. It belongs to the teachers in the state of Minnesota. It's money that would they would have to make up down the road as they're looking for their own increases and so on. So that money rightfully belongs to TRA and to the beneficiaries. I'd like to just talk briefly about the problems with this trust fund. We can get into that. The trust is held solely, if you read the trust documents, for the benefit of the Minneapolis Teachers Board, which again will no longer exist in one day, and the executive director. But if you look at who's named individually, it is themselves also as individuals. So the money is held in trust for their benefit, even though they will no longer exist. This arrangement is clearly illegal. The Attorney General's office will also testify to that behalf, and it's been that's been all over the papers also. I have to state there is a hearing scheduled on August 19th. That is the first date. It's essentially a conference, legal conference, to set the first hearing date for this court case to go to court. There's no provision whatsoever in state law that authorizes a pension fund to create a separate trust. None whatsoever. In addition, as you probably know, pension plan assets, of which these are those, they are a dedicated fund that can only be used to pay the benefits to the beneficiaries or reasonable administrative expenses. The liquidating trust benefits the board, the Minneapolis Teachers Board, its executive director, and its members, again, of who will no longer exist in the day. It does not benefit the pensioners whatsoever. It's clear that the cost of creating and operating the trust are not reasonable expenses of any pension plan. I think, you know, the merger legislation that passed this body essentially does away with Minneapolis Teachers, and it completely transfers its members, its assets, its liabilities, and all of its obligations to TRA. What this trust did is that it usurped that, and it denied this by withholding money from TRA, and it takes away TRA's decision-making authority. What will happen, and what is happening, is that under the trust, the trustee, who I believe is here, Mr. Harry Hainsworth, the trustee is going to have complete control over this $1.5 million as an individual. So the merger legislation, as you know, it prohibited the board from entering into new contracts. So what the board did is the board created a trust that can enter into new contracts on its behalf instead. The trust did really precisely what you prohibited. Now, under the law that was passed, TRA takes on all of Minneapolis teachers' obligations, all of them, including their liability coverage. We have been told by the executive director, Karen Kilberg, of Minneapolis Teachers, that they have already paid close to $700,000, though, of the obligations that were supposed to be paid by TRA, the same obligations that the trust says that they could pay. This is very likely, although we haven't seen the checks, but we've been told that the checks for the severances have already been cut. They haven't been cashed, but they've been cut. And that would make sense when you're looking at a $700,000 figure. We believe other expenses were paid. Yet the legislation as it passed said that TRA would have to pay these expenses. So Minneapolis teachers themselves are taking it on their own behalf to pay those expenses. It creates a problem for TRA and SBI that it need to, they're concerned about double paying certain bills because the bills are supposed to be paid by TRA and SBI, not by Minneapolis teachers or by this trust fund. Another issue one of indemnification. One of the main justifications that the Minneapolis Teachers Board gives for creating this illegal trust is to provide for indemnification of the board members and executive directors. Under the legislation that passed, TRA itself has to continue to provide for indemnification for good faith efforts. That the state law says that you indemnify officials on their behalf for good faith efforts. And unless there is issues beyond good faith, and maybe that's where this, I don't know where this is heading, but they shouldn't need to have excess coverage for good faith efforts. Couple other things I want to, you've got what the trust essentially can pay for. It's in their documents. It's also in the Attorney General's response. Most of these things are in the legislation to already be paid for by TRA. So most of these expenses, it was already laid out that TRA would pay these expenses. The only things that are different in here is potentially fees and really legal fees probably or insurance fees to be paid on behalf of the teachers' board's fiduciaries, their board members and their executive director down the road, potentially. And so if you take a look at it, what's it going to be ultimately, what is new in here that didn't exist under the legislation, it's potentially those sort of things. And I can take questions on that if you want. We are, my office does have authority to get documents to audit the trust under Chapter, Carla? 16C, under Chapter 16C. We have gotten some documents from the trust fund, and we'll be continually doing that until this trust is dissolved. Again, until the court hearings occur or the lawsuit is settled, this trust, there's no way to get rid of this trust unless it's done through the court system, and that's going to be in the hands of the TRA board and the Attorney General. In the meantime, I can go in and get documents or anything that you would request on your own. But there's a lot of issues we already know about. For example, we were told that there was no contract already with the trust special counsel and attorney, Thomas King, yet we know that there's already been fees of $13,000 that have been incurred. And so there are already gaps, and where we know there's been expenses, we know there's probably contracts, but they claim that there are no contracts. I think that this whole thing is a perfect example of why the action that you took on April 11th was the correct action to take. There have been shenanigans after shenanigans going on with this fund during this whole discussion about merger. Everything from the severance packages to now this issue to other issues, and the quicker that we could get the merger occurring, the quicker we could give the authority to a different body such as TRA, I think the better off the taxpayers and the pensioners are here in Minnesota. So it could be done quick enough, frankly, that's my opinion on this. I will stand for questions on whatever you would like.
Okay, questions for the auditor first. I'll go through a couple. Madam Auditor, you've been in office now for 4 years. How often have you used your subpoena power?
Once. This is the only time
you've had to use your subpoena power?
Correct.
My second question is, we have a liquidating trust set up for $1.532 million. If this was not set up, the severance would just be paid after July 1st. Would that be correct? Severance for Ms. Kilberg and anyone else involved?
It's supposed to be paid on the last day of employment. It was set up through the legislation. Ultimately, it would have been paid by TRA on probably July 1st. I want to make one comment about that. They did some addition to get to their $1.5 million, and part of that included paying these severances. So they squirreled away the money to pay certain things, including the severance, but they've already paid it. And I would believe that most of these expenses that they've already paid, that they state they've paid $700,000 or close of the expenses that were supposed to be the $1.5 million, according to their own logic.
So the $700,000 is out of the $1.5 million or above beyond that?
It is beyond that, because the $1.5 exists, according to... Ms. Kilberg's own, I believe it's in the, is it in the AG? Huh? It's separate. But it's, according to her own statements, I believe under oath, they have paid $700,000 of the what they did is they made a list to get to $1.5 million, to justify the $1.5
million. Okay.
And some of those things on those lists, they've already paid separately out of their own, funds, which they should not have done without TRA authority.
Okay, very good.
So they don't even have a justification for the $1.5 million under that scenario, if in fact those were paid already,
right,
which they say they were.
I'll be asking Mr. Heffelfinger maybe if he can clarify some of these things. I'm not liking what I'm hearing so far in terms of where these monies came from and what they're supposed to be for. Members, we're having the what is this again?
Kilberg's affidavit.
Oh, this is the affidavit from Ms. Kilberg, so you can take a look and I know there's a lot of documents here. Some look similar and some are from different groups. So page 7 under the various bullet points are severance obligations of MTRFA to its employees is the fourth bullet point that you can see on page 7. So that kind of ratifies what has been said here. Other questions, Representative Mulligan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First question. You said the legislation passed on 5/21 and that it said that from the time of passage, MTRFA couldn't enter any contracts. And I was looking at the language in the, I think in the bill, isn't that the final?
Yeah.
We're looking at the last engrossment. It says date of enactment. Was that changed after that to passage? Or because my understanding was from Mark is that the date of enactment is when the governor signs it.
Right. It wasn't changed.
Does it change?
No, it was always from the date the governor signed because that's the official passage.
Okay. I just want to check because you had...
What they did
you
was,
have the language, I can read it, I have the sentence here. It says, between the date of enactment of this section and June 30th, 2006, the Minneapolis Teacher Retirement Fund Association cannot incur a new or additional enforceable contractual liability or obligation without approval of the Teacher Retirement Association.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, isn't this kind of splitting hairs on whether it was an act or a bill or a law? I mean, I think the intent of at least our committee when we did this was that they weren't going to be doing any of these types of things.
Mr. Chairman, we can get... First, I'm trying to get... I mean, technicalities are important. And
I know
it's true, and I think I'm probably far more worried about the... I know I, in good faith, explained this to a lot of members who voted on my basis on... Yeah. Believing me, and I'm in real mess right now with people because of what they're doing. So,
no,
I'm very upset about that.
People kind of knew what the actual language said,
and I agree that we want to look at the overall, but it's also important to get the technical. And I know another thing, and I haven't done trust law for quite a while, but you said no law allows a pension plan to create a trust. I know that some of them do. For instance, at the Minneapolis Police Pension at the time of when they're down to a certain number of members, I think we put it at 225 a couple years ago, at that point they have to create a trust.
Mm-hmm.
So the law and it does in certain cases, now maybe it doesn't allow this kind of a trust to be created or something, and I don't know if you were speaking under 501B or common law or some other...
Mm-hmm. This is Kyla Heil, my general counsel.
Ms. Heil, if you could introduce yourself and your positions.
Kyla Heil, Deputy State Auditor General Counsel. It's under 354A.021. It says what the Minneapolis Teachers Fund and the other first class city teacher funds can create, and it's a special fund. And I believe if you wanted more specific information, Larry Martin would also have the background of liquidating trusts or not having trusts. But specifically, under the Minneapolis Teachers, they do not have the authority.
Okay, so I know that he's done a whole bunch of police and fire ones under him. But so I wanted to make sure that about the... And then the $700,000, I know you...
Mm-hmm.
You started talking about that, and exactly what is that? It's mm-hmm. the Karen's mm-hmm. salary, and what else? That can't be that much,
Adam,
I don't think.
Thank you. I don't think we know everything. It is in their own, is this their lawsuit? Her own testimony. Her affidavit. Karen herself says that they have paid $700,000 of their outstanding obligations themselves, and those are the same things that the trust was supposed to pay. If you look at what the trust was allowed to pay, they set up a In order to justify the $1.5 million, they set up, they did the math. So much for severance, so much for this, so much for this. And to get to the $1.5 million. And, but according to Karen's own affidavit, they have already paid out of Minneapolis teachers' funds $700,000 worth of those obligations.
That's, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, before the trust was created then.
Well,
or
it's
separate
been
from the,
during the same time.
Separate from the trust.
The documents we handed out would be page 9, number 19, $697,452 under the affidavit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Madam Auditor.
One other comment. They have, they told somebody, one of the, I don't remember who, but I'm sure they testified that they've already cut the checks for the severance, and that's about the amount, the $700,000. But Minneapolis teachers have already cut their own severance checks.
No. There's severance for, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I knew Karen got the thing.
Some of the other employees got much smaller amounts, but they got some.
Oh, even
last vacation days, those sort of things. And some of them got smaller amounts of severance.
Oh, so that's, okay, that's not a kind of a, because I know they're getting hired by TRA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's legitimate, it sounds like. Is that correct?
Water, is that severance or just cash out of vacation?
If it's built into their contract, I assume it's
both.
We're not questioning it.
Yeah.
Or something. Is there any argument from your side, either AG or auditor, that what severance shouldn't be paid because they're being hired by another state agency, in essence?
That was Mr. Mulry. The legislation, we mentioned that they had changed the contracts to allow that, and Karen Kilbrick's contract was also changed that they got 6 months worth of severance. TIA recognized that they would pay the severance, and they also provided that they would hire them. So there isn't any dispute that those would be paid.
There were things that should have been paid by TRA after the fact, though. And it was in the legislation to allow that.
So
there was no way around that. They were contracted.
Okay. And then a question on the, and I don't know if we yet have, I had tried to get a copy of the trust earlier, and I don't think we even have it yet, but the indemnification provisions, are they broader than, I mean, it was a very hard worked out deal that they would take the indemnification under 356A11 like the rest of every other fund.
Right.
And they specifically agreed to that now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they approved of that. My understanding is the board and the members. I was told by some prior Committee of 13 members that only one vote against and one abstention or something from members. So, is the language in the trust agreement limited to 356A.11, what they can be indemnified for?
Representative Mulry, under the trust document, they have indemnification under 317A, which is a private nonprofit, as opposed to under 356, which are the pension funds. But it's really more a matter of semantics, because under both statutes, you have to have acted in good faith in order to get indemnification.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I think
Ms. Heil, is that?
Correct.
I think that actually is a narrower indemnification, because 356A11, I believe, allows a board to indemnify not only for good faith, but for bad faith and actions taken while in breach of fiduciary duty if the board approves it, I think, under 356A11. So the trust document then seems to be much more narrow as to what can be indemnified. So they're not broadening the indemnification, it would seem like. Is that correct?
Ms. Hale?
Representative Mulry, Mr. Chair, it is unclear the purpose of the trust document, because you point out that the legislation clearly provided for indemnification.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm just also, I mean, we have very broad language. It's when you can be in bad faith and in breach of your fiduciary duty and still get indemnified by the board, it's pretty broad, and I was wondering if they were
wanting an absolute language or something.
I think actually the language, it is, it's intended that if you act in good faith, obviously the claim would be that you acted in bad faith.
Mr. Chairman, just one quick aside. I'm wondering what the auditor getting into. It's not only, I don't know what's, I know Mr. Heffelfinger is sort of connected in the Republican Party, and it's, I think you mentioned Tom King is involved somehow in this. Is he the one that...
Is he what, one of us?
Gene LaVander?
I don't know who he is.
Oh.
And I've never met Mr. Heffelfinger.
A friend of mine's college roommate was Gene LaVander, and she married a Tom King, as I recall. And she was the governor's daughter. So.
I have no idea who he is.
Okay.
We're done with the... Okay. Representative Solberg, let's move along.
We'll try and not have...
Somebody else fighting.
Have questions that will... or make a statement that the court of law will say that this is illegal, because the courts of law have not determined that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, and in looking at affidavits and so forth, that I've not had a chance to read at all. But in just looking at on page 9... It looks like some of this may have come as a request of, according to this affidavit anyway, the request of TRA on 23, and I'm just scanning this, I've not read it, so my question may be a little bit inappropriate or misleading, but it says that because the auditor's amendment shortened the time of merger, TRA requested that the Minnesota Teachers or Minneapolis Teachers extend its contract with Ceridian, it's a payroll administrator, beyond the then current obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And that would then extend that contract to June 30th of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And is that part of the obligations that are then being paid for by this trust fund?
Madam Auditor?
Any contract that Minneapolis Teachers is in automatically goes to TRA. So if they're in any contracts whatsoever, and that's why we had to get the contracts during the session to find out what they had, they automatically become TRA's contracts. So if TRA, and TRA did request this, but it will become TRA's contract on the 1st, it will become TRA's contract. So, you know, they just want to continue to use them. That's all that is.
But my question was, is that part... I don't have the list of their justification for 1.7.
Okay.
I'm hearing bits and pieces of it. Do we have that as a document that we can all look at?
I do not know, Representative Solberg, if you have that as a document, but... Minneapolis Teachers.
In regard to what it's supposed to be used for, Representative.
Yeah, well, I mean, pages 6 and 7, I believe, are the bullet points under 14. The liabilities on the Kilberg affidavit document that we handed out. Pages 6 and 7. If you look toward the bottom of page 6, it'll say these liabilities and obligations include, and then it gives these various.
Mr. Chair, I understand that. I saw that.
Okay.
But I would like to have some, you know, is the obligation that they're justifying the 1.7, is, are they including the Korean contract and how much?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know.
Right. I mean, I'd like to have a document in front of me that from both the auditor's office that says, well, the $700,000 been spent. I want to have some proof that it's been spent or that checks have been and... we hear all kinds of allegations from two different states that this is that obligation in this counter here. I'd like to have some numbers with these, and someone has to have the numbers someplace. I've got that document in front of me.
I've seen it, so it's not here. You think you have it?
I don't know.
Yeah, we do. We can get it before you. We'll call the office and find
that
it.
That would be great.
We'll
an itemization of the $700,000.
Yeah, I would like to have. Well, no, not even the $700,000.
We don't have that.
Justification for the 1.5.
We have that.
Yeah. Okay.
From them, the 700 is simply the number that Karen gave in her own affidavit that says that's been paid. And you'll have to ask questions of the. If there's anybody here from the Minneapolis Teachers, maybe they can answer this question.
I guess an answer in part to Representative Silver's question, Minneapolis teachers did hire a financial advisor to figure out what to set aside. They did include the lease, which TIA takes over. They did also include the management fees of the funds, which SBI takes over. They included the severance package, which would be paid out by TRA. They also included $100,000 worth of legal fees for creating the trust and $50,000 worth of trustee fees to run the trust.
Mr. Chair, we're getting these numbers thrown out, and someone has had the opportunity to see those.
You can ask Mr. Heffelfinger since should happen.
In all due respect, Mr. Chair, you give me the numbers. Someone has to have had them. Right. Maybe you got them even.
Mm-hmm.
Get the numbers in detail to us.
Right. We will. We'll have that to you within half an hour.
Okay. Any other questions for the auditor? We're going to move on to TRA next. Representative De La Forest, did you have a question?
Yeah, just briefly, Mr. Chairman, from Ms. Heil, since she's a general counsel, and a question that I think is important besides, you know, where did the money go and what is it earmarked for? Again, I'm having trouble understanding where the board got this particular authority. I mean, they are a body that is going to cease to exist. They had a fiduciary obligation to manage funds for the sole benefit of the Minneapolis teachers who participate in the program, yet from what I see in reading through this trust document is that they took funds that they are obligated to keep for the sole benefit of the teachers and appropriated it into a trust solely for the benefit of themselves. As I look through the liquidating trust document, which I've only had time to scan, it appears to me that the trust is established essentially for the sole purpose of indemnification of the board of directors, and there is no mention of the teachers being beneficiaries of these trust funds, even though it is their money to begin with. I'm having trouble understanding, and like an opinion, Mr. Heffelfinger, I'd like and the Attorney General's office can weigh in. Where do they get authority to take money that is for the benefit of someone else, $1.5 million worth, and they put it in trust essentially to cover themselves? I mean, if you look at the trust document, it says essentially the trust doesn't terminate until we're free and clear legally, we the executive board. It's a cover-your-butt document, and I want to know from the other law-trained people who have an interest today, by what statute, by what common law or decisional authority do you get the power to take money of the beneficiaries and, you know, create a trust to protect yourself?
It's a little lengthy, Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
Representative De La Forest, the answer is the State Auditor's Office does not believe that any statute allows that. In fact, we believe that everything they did is contrary to state law. As you said, they didn't have authority to create the trust. The pension statutes clearly say that the money is intended for pension benefits. This trust document clearly states that the beneficiary is the board and the executive director. You are correct. There is no mention of pensioners. We have talked to TIA. They have exactly the same concern that you have voiced and we have voiced. And they can explain the resolution why they believe that it's a violation of the law and clearly what pension funds are intended to do. That it's for the pensioners, not for the boards themselves.
Representative De La Forest.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, any other questions? We can bring the auditor back later, too. I want to make sure everybody has their say on this. Ma'am Auditor, thank you. And
thank you.
Keep your ears peeled for other questions that may relate to you. I guess since we brought up TRA in the last questioning, is Lori Hacking available or Luther Thompson? If you could maybe, since you're both with TRA, if you could both come together, identify yourself and give us your testimony in regard. We're going to try to stick with the liquidating trust if we can. If you want to, I guess my first question is, everything I've read is that when we put the language in place that said, Representative Mullen alluded to this, that TRA is essentially in law, we said that there are supposed to be no new or enforceable contractual liability obligations without approval of TRA. So, you know, my first question, if you can bring it, mix it in with your testimony, is did you get A, notification, and B, give permission for this to happen, since it was always my understanding that TRA would always approve any other new obligations? That's kind of what we talked about when we had our hearing back in April, I believe it was. So welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is Laurie Hacking. I'm Executive Director of TRA, and with me is Luther Thompson, our Assistant Executive Director for Legal and Legislation. To answer your initial question, no, we did not get notice of the creation of the liquidating trust until June 1st, which was after it was formed. So we were not asked about it or did not grant any prior approval. Thank you for having us today, and I think I've passed out some written comments, and I'll just briefly go through them. First of all, I'd like to reassure the committee that both the asset transfer and benefits administration aspects of the merger are moving along. We have been working very hard on that. They are on track to meet the deadline, which is tomorrow. And on that date, all of the assets, liabilities, records are to be transferred to TRA, and the Minneapolis members and retirees will become members of TRA. With respect to the asset transfer, Howard Dicker is here and he can speak to you, but my understanding is the bulk of the $700 million-plus of assets have come over. That happened last week. In dispute, of course, is the liquidating trust, and that's what we're all here to, I guess, talk about. Just briefly, with respect to benefits administration, again, we have been working very diligently over the past month to get a seamless transition. Minneapolis Teachers initially was reluctant to engage in transition activities until the bill was actually signed by the governor, so we've had a very concentrated period of time to get all the administrative aspects in place. And those administrative aspects involve the July 1 annuity payment. We believe TRA will be able to pay annuities July 1. All of those financial and administrative mechanisms are in place to do that. We're processing new retirees. There are some 70 to 80 new retirees in Minneapolis who will be expecting checks this summer, and that's underway. It's a lot of data conversion that is going to happen over the next year. This is very intensive converting of their manual files into our electronic systems. We're working with the Minneapolis School District on payroll reporting. That district has had a lot of difficulty with a new payroll reporting system, so we're working with them so that they can come up to our compliance standards. We're reaching out to the members of Minneapolis teachers to explain to them the new law and what it means for them. And we are going to be assimilating 7 members of the Minneapolis teacher staff onto our staff as they will become new employees, state employees. So now, with respect to the $1.5 million liquidating trust, I'll just give you some factual background. You've heard a lot of it already from the auditor. I'll try not to repeat it, but on June 1st is when we, along with the auditor and the AG, received notice, our first notice of the creation of this trust. It seems that the main purposes are indemnification, payment of employee severance, and other costs that might be trailing after the June 30th consolidation date. As soon as we heard about this trust, we were quite troubled with it, and mainly because we had understood and had been operating under the assumption all along that Chapter 277 did provide for trustee indemnification and did provide for TRA to step into the shoes as the successor in interest to Minneapolis teachers to pay any trailing financial obligations. We had been operating under that assumption and had heard no major issues raised by Minneapolis teachers about any concerns in this regard. So immediately after getting notice of the creation of the trust, we did ask for an accounting of how the trust fund assets would be used, and I believe that's the accounting that the auditor is going to try to obtain for you. As we looked at it in detail and the items that were listed, we came to the conclusion that the trust was really unnecessary and duplicative. So it was at that point that we approached the Attorney General's office to review the matter, and we got advice from them and basically decided that as fiduciaries, and considering that the new law states that all assets are to be transferred to TRA, we felt that this liquidating trust could run the risk of violating that new law. So on June 7th, we authorized the Attorney General to pursue any legal proceedings to try to secure those assets and make sure that they come over, and to try to dissolve, seek action to dissolve the trust. Now, we worked hard in the interim with the assistance of the Attorney General to reach a mutual agreement with Minneapolis Teachers, and it was very unfortunate that Minneapolis Teachers did decide to file a lawsuit on June 29th, even though we were trying to reach some agreement and accommodation. So since then, legal proceedings have ensued with Minneapolis Teachers arguing their rights and their need to create this trust, and TRA asserting its obligation to ensure that all the assets are transferred. Mm-hmm. And as you're aware, Minneapolis Teachers is also asserting that they're governed by the nonprofit statutes 317A, and we've been arguing that no, Chapter 277, the new law, is really more specific and a law that governs this merger. So at this point in time, we are trying, and we remain somewhat hopeful, that we can reach agreement among all the parties to assure that the trust will be dissolved and that all the assets, including the $1.5 million, will come over to TRA. This, if we're able to reach an agreement, it certainly would avoid what are mounting legal bills that we don't have a lot of control over at this point. If you have any questions with regard to this agreement or with regard to the legal proceedings, I believe representatives from the Attorney General's office are already on your agenda. So in summary, I'd like to assure the committee that we're working very hard to make sure this merger happens smoothly, at least from a benefits administration perspective, and we remain hopeful that we can resolve some of these issues in dispute without incurring a lot more legal fees.
Okay, so Ms. Hacking, thank you first of all for coming in. So in other words, TRA asked for a restraining order to stop the liquidating trust from spending any money, correct?
Yes.
And then Minneapolis then had a motion to quash the TRA motion, correct?
Mr. Chair, it didn't quite happen that way. Minneapolis Teachers first filed to face with the court to say validate this liquidating trust.
Okay.
We at the same time answered that complaint, and we asked at that time, after Minneapolis Teachers had filed their suit, okay, we asked for the temporary restraining order.
And contested that. Okay.
Yes.
Is that the 19th?
Is that the June 19th document that's in the back?
The number was 29.
It's the one that has the lawsuit of Minneapolis Teacher Retirement Fund versus the Attorney General and Minnesota Teacher Retirement. Is it that one, Luther? He's nodding his head.
That's the Minneapolis suit.
That's the Minneapolis suit. So and we'll bring up the Minneapolis attorneys here soon, but who pays for all the attorneys who are going back and forth, quashing motions, asking for changes of venues, etc.? I mean, what is it? Is it the liquidating trust that's paying for this? Or does it represent Solberg, who's a retired teacher, and that money should be going to his pension fund, but instead is now paying for various attorneys? Or, I mean, how is this all getting paid for?
It is coming out of either the liquidating trust or the Minneapolis Teachers funds, but I can't speak specifically because we don't know how that's getting paid at this point.
And we're looking at mid-August hearing, and we're looking at, I mean, no insult to my two attorney friends on the committee, but, I mean, this isn't free.
Oh, okay.
And if we're arguing about changes of venues and quashing and restraining orders and everything else, someone's going to have to pay for these people who are running back and forth to the courthouse, and in my opinion, it's going to be the retired teachers of Minnesota, which is outrageous. Particularly if the court finds that the liquidating trust was illegal, then who pays for it? And maybe I'll ask that question of the attorneys when they come up. Do you know the answer? I'll ask the Attorney General. If they find the liquidating trust is illegal, then is it become pro bono at that point? I find that hard to believe, but I mean, at some point, you know, I don't know where this is going to come from, but I can tell you, I got a few emails from teachers in my district that are kind of wondering this stuff because they feel the liquidating trust is rightfully their money. So you tend to agree with that, I would assume.
Yes, it should be the assets of the fund, the pension fund.
Questions for TRA, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hacking, if I understood your testimony correctly, you said that you reviewed the list of liabilities that were included in that total that the trust was established to deal with, and that you didn't, and you felt that there weren't any problems with that.
If I could clarify, we asked for an accounting of why the trust was set up and what the amount. How did they come up with $1.532 million? And mm-hmm. in reviewing that list of anticipated expenditures, we felt that all of those expenditures were already taken care of by under Chapter 277, the new law, and therefore there was really no need to set up a separate trust. That the what they outlined there, things for severance, for indemnification of trustees, for payment of the investment management fees that would be trailing after June 30th. By our estimation, that was already taken care of in the new law, and we felt no need for a separate trust to pay for those expenses.
But, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Hackney, I guess what I'm trying to get straight here is that you reviewed that list and found that all of the liabilities that were listed were legitimate. And was there anything included in the amount of the trust beyond what you regarded as legitimate liabilities?
Well, I wouldn't speak to whether they were legitimate or not, because there are things in there, for example, for attorney's fees, for the trustee's fees, and those sorts of things that again, we didn't believe the trust needed to be created in the first place. That those obligations were already going to be taken care of. And therefore, there was no need for a separate trust of $1.5 million that, by the way, would not come over in the transfer of assets. That's kind of the point here, is that the new law requires all assets to be transferred to TRA, but this $1.5 was going to be reserved and not transferred.
Mr. Thompson, do you have something to add to that?
Mr. Thompson from TRA. I think there were really... And what Laurie has pointed out, almost all of the costs were legitimate, but there were three items that concerned us. One was the fiduciary liability insurance. Now, this was an addition to full indemnification we had under 356A, which they agreed to, and we had a lot of language about the may and the shall and the must, and we put the language in there exactly like they wanted. But then they came up with a 317 language after that made it, more mandatory. And then besides that, they have fiduciary liability insurance of about $156,000 in there. Plus, then you had another $150,000 for trustee and legal fees, and then you had an addition of 10% contingency of another $140,000. So there was about $440,000 in there that we certainly felt were unnecessary, and those were above and beyond the normal costs and contracts that we had fully expected to assume.
So in dispute is about $440,000 of the indemnification insurance and attorney's costs, et cetera, associated with that, that you're contesting.
Mr. Chairman, that really, in those three categories, would have been above and beyond, which we would normally would have assumed had the liquidating trust not been in place.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, just so they're not being bound by that, I think they're saying that's from their present knowledge. They don't know what might be expended from here on, and I don't think they're saying that's automatically okay. Is that correct?
Okay, and we'll ask. We're going to have Mr. Heffelfinger up first. He might be able to shed some light on a lot of these things instead of the he said, she said back and forth. Any other questions for the TRA folks? Representative Finstead? And the handout right now is the state auditor's, Madam Auditor, what was this again? This document we asked for?
Yes.
It says confidential on the second page. What is this?
If you turn to page 4 of it, you were asking for a listing of all the expected expenditures from the trust, and that's what this is.
Very good. Okay. Members, page 4 under the exhibits would be the estimates of what the trust was going to be used for. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick, simple question.
you both were in my office towards the end of session when we talked about this. This trust fund was set up a day after we adjourned. Were you aware that this was in the process, that this was something the Minneapolis teachers were doing or thinking about or going to do?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Finstead, no. Never in our conversations had this ever been alluded to. I mean, we just talked about the language. We went over this language. We've been working on it for the last 3 years. And, you know, we're going to change the language on indemnification to may, to shall, to must. And we finally insisted upon having it shall indemnify, and we put it in there. We had, you know, at our last meeting, we thought that this is the way it was going to be. That was what we believed consistently throughout. That was satisfactory. Never did they bring, you know, the issue about 317 coverage. Now, granted, they were a nonprofit corporation, but they never insisted upon it. They could very easily have said, instead of 356A, we want the mandatory coverage in 317A. And in both cases, it's a good faith coverage. Not only that, if you get to the liquidating trust agreement, they put in there $150,000 for the additional tail coverage for the next 3 years. Now, that was never discussed. So, no, we did not know about it, and we were very surprised when Mr. Heffelfinger and Mr. Hainsworth came into our office to discuss this on the same day they discussed it with the state auditor and the attorney general. That was the first time we knew about it.
Representative Finson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to point that out, now you said the first time they discussed this with you was, what was the date? Was that June, middle of June?
I believe June 1st.
Okay, so a week after it had happened. Mr. Chair, just a simple point for that. I mean, that alone smells fishy to me. So whatever, again, I'm just a non-lawyer, simple farm kid from Brown County, but to me, common sense, something's not snowing right here.
Okay, any other questions before we bring Mr. Heffelfinger up? And I guess... Mr. Thompson, I'm looking at the exhibit that the state auditor handed out on professional fees. Was that one of the objections you had, was the $501,000?
Mr. Chairman, now if you go through there, first of all, it's the fiduciary liability insurance coverage. It says $156,000, and that was for tail coverage. They'd already entered into an agreement. They applied for the insurance on February 2nd of this year, this additional fiduciary insurance. Yep. So that's $156,000. Professional fees include some investment fees. But if you go back to page 7 or exhibit 10, in there you'll see the estimated professional fees. And in there you have $100,000 for additional legal fees, and you have $50,000 for trustee fees, and then you have the other professional services. Now, we've talked about the Ceridian contract. We did ask that the Ceridian contract be extended, but the extension for the Ceridian contract is not in here. We have to have the contract with Ceridian extended to make sure there's an orderly payment to the annuitants after July 1st. That contract was to run out shortly, so we have requested that remain in existence through the end of the year, and that facilitates the printing of the 1099s and the payment. But we have set up an account to make those payments. Then the third thing I added there is, if you go down to the bottom, you have a subtotal of $1,392,000. Well, then you add it on a 10% contingency reserve. That's $140,000 that's just sitting there that should have been transferred over tomorrow for the benefit of the members.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't understand why our TARA teachers are losing the $156,000 for fiduciary liability insurance if they're covered under the law the state of Minnesota is going to be able to pay off far more than $156,000. Why are we purchasing something to ensure that we pay $156,000 and taking that much out of the already deficiency in the fund?
Is that more of a question for someone else, Mr. Thompson?
Or even if it's $10 million, the state can...
Mr. Chairman, the motives for buying the fiduciary insurance, you'd have to ask the Minneapolis Teacher Fund or their attorneys.
Any further questions? We're going to bring up...
There's just one quick question there. On exhibit 9, at page 6 of that, I'm looking quickly at the policy itself, and it's the $10 million aggregate. Except for breach of fiduciary duty...
Mr. Chairman,
representative. I'm not an insurance expert, but it talks about that's retention. There's a $100,000 retention except for breach of fiduciary duty or non-indemnifiable loss. I don't know what that means. You'll have to ask an insurance person. But that's the premium. They paid $59,000 for that policy. It became effective on April 6, 2006. And so what we're talking about is the additional, or the tail coverage for that, extending it for 3 years. That's the $156,000 figure that they have provided down below. So they already paid the $59,000, and then in this fiduciary agreement, they have another $156,000 for tail coverage.
Mr. Chairman, the $59,000, since it was done on April 6th, even though you were in negotiations, and they probably should have disclosed it, that in and of itself was probably a legitimate expense.
Yes, but our understanding is that they've already gone ahead and extended it further. In recent days.
Mr. Chairman, I can understand the extension being under question, but at least in my opinion, if it may not have been the right thing to do, but it was a legitimate thing to do in April 6th for that.
Mr. Thompson, you're saying that the three-year coverage has already been incurred? They've already paid that out?
That's the extension. Currently, there's a policy in effect from April 6, 2006 to April 6, 2007.
Right.
But you have to file suit within that period of time. It's my understanding what they want is additional coverage beyond that period of time for an additional 3 years or 6 years. The policy says that they can do it for a minimum of 3 years. So it's $156,000 that they they included here in the liquidating trust to make that payment. And it's our understanding that they've already paid for that. Now, I don't know what the exact number is. There's been different estimates of that in different time periods. But in here, in this liquidating trust and these expenses, that was for a 3 year period for $156,000. It might be more or less than that, but you have to do a risk assessment whether there was the need for it beyond the normal indemnification for all other fiduciaries in the state of Minnesota. I don't know. That's the decision that the Minneapolis board made.
But Representative Mallory brought up earlier that they already have exemption under good faith efforts. Already, so I'm trying to. I mean, what is this for? If you made some honest mistakes, you're already covered. Am I not right, Representative Mallory and Dela Forest? If you made honest mistakes in the fiduciary situation, you're covered under the law already. So what is all this for? What are we doing 4 years of
extension? Mr. Chairman, under 356A11, which we gave them in the law, which is the same as we give to other ones, specifically says that the board of, in this case it would be TRA, in other cases if it's the police board or whatever, they're for the pension fund, can actually indemnify even for bad faith breach of fiduciary duty if the board deems it appropriate. So it's extremely broad. It's broader than this would be, and I question even why. I'm questioning my fellow seatmate here why it would be legitimate to buy the $59,000 even. You've got huge assets in the fund to use. It just seems like why does the state normally, when we are insuring something, do we go out and buy a policy to ensure that we pay something, or?
Mr. Chair, if I could suggest that your questions about the motivation and why Minneapolis Teachers wants this additional coverage, I think you really need to ask those witnesses. And with respect to whether acts of bad faith would be covered under the fiduciary statute, I don't think they are, but that again is a better question to ask the Attorney General.
Okay. We'll be bringing the Attorney General's office up after the TRA attorneys, or the Minneapolis attorneys. Representative Mallory, Dela Forest, Krenke, did you have your hand up too before? Okay. We'll get these three taken care of, and then we're going to move on to Mr. Heffelfinger, Representative Mallory.
Chairman, I just wanted to, Brad got me the statute language, and it's under 356A11, they may be indemnified from liability for fiduciary breach. It's at the discretion of the board of the plan. So even if they're in a fiduciary breach, they're covered, which is pretty broad, and I would guess is broader than their insurance, that I don't understand why we're paying for.
I agree. Representative DeLaForest, then Krenke, and then we will move on to the Minneapolis folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just need a clarification from Mr. Thompson here. He had testified, sir, that there was obviously an extended debate and negotiation between TRA and the Minneapolis teachers about this merger. Extended conversation. And when I look at $1.5 million in itemized contingencies in payouts in a trust fund, I just wanted to clarify, did you have negotiations about this and TRA said no, or these are things that were never discussed and were sort of just sprung upon you, I believe, around the 1st of June? I'm just trying to get a feel for these itemized things. Are they things that TRA knew about and said no, or you just had no idea they were never a subject of discussion?
Chairman Secret, Representative LaFosse, no. We never discussed specific items. We were going to be the successor of an interest to all claims and all contracts that currently existed. And we discussed that through a number of months between the executive director of TRA and the executive director of Minneapolis. We tried to get lists of all the contracts, exactly what they had over there. Most of the things that were in the trust here, we agreed with the state auditor that there were separation payments, there were severance payments. Those things were contractual obligations, and even though we might have some, I guess we felt that they were sort of legitimate expenses because they were legitimate contracts. However, nowhere did we believe or think that there would be additional expenses that are listed here in this liquidating trust. For example, the insurance coverage, the additional trustee, fees, the lawyer fees, the contingency fees, and those sorts of things. And we talked about the language in the indemnification. Representative Mullery had many conversations with us saying, this word or that word. We talked with the people from Minneapolis, and it was our understanding all along that they would have indemnification just like our trustees. We would not withhold it unreasonably, and we would certainly indemnify them for all good faith acts. And whether the statute includes more or less than that, that's, that's a legal issue that you'll have to talk to our counsel and the Attorney General.
Marty, just to follow up.
Representative LaForest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Thompson, for example, if you look at $330,000 for Ms. Kilberg, you say, you never had any discussions of that, or put another way, that was a complete surprise to you when you first laid eyes on this document earlier this month that the board of directors of the Minneapolis teachers had contemplated this kind of payout?
Mr. Chairman, Representative DeLaFosse, we never knew the exact amount of that. We knew that she would get paid. We didn't know what would be in her severance package. There was an amendment to her contract earlier this year that included the severance package of the 6 month severance that all the other employees got. The issue really related to probably her the year's salary. That her salary or contract was extended earlier this year. The argument being that was an anticipation that the board and the staff would continue on over there for a year. However, when the language in the bill changed, that was no longer needed. It's my understanding that the state auditor went back to the board and asked them some questions about it. They felt it was a legitimate expense. We felt we were going to certainly assume all legitimate expenses and contracts that they had entered into. We never knew about the liquidating trust. We never knew about the fiduciary, extended fiduciary insurance. There would have been no need for the trustee fees and the legal fees if there had been no liquidating trust. And we certainly don't know what the 10% contingency amount in here of $140,000. Now, it was a complete surprise to us on June 1st when they came over and said, we established a liquidating trust to facilitate this merger.
Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While this topic is certainly fascinating, and for those of us who've been here for a while and tracked what's gone on with Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund for several years, I'm not sure that we're going to come to any conclusions here because of the litigation that's ensuing, and I don't see any reason to hear from Mr. Heffelfinger. All he's going to do is run up the charges for the fund, and goes for all the rest of the attorneys in the room. So this fleecing of the taxpayers that's occurred by the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund is just outrageous. It's been going on for years. In fact, my suggestion is that what we do is we present the Golden Shovel Award to the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund for digging such a huge hole. It's going to take 30 years for the taxpayers to fill it in. And just to sit here and listen to a bunch of attorneys defend their clients and make excuses as to what happened, Mr. Chairman, I don't think does us or the taxpayers any good. So we might as well realize that the fleecing has occurred and will continue to occur with the filing of lawsuits, and we might as well adjourn.
That's why I suggested that we promptly adjourn at 3:30 so we can get the clock shut off, Representative Krenke. So being that we're getting closer to that time, we'll bring some of those folks up. I have to say for constituents who are retired teachers, there's a lot of consternation, and I think they have a right for us to exercise oversight authority. If we had a vote, I think all of us would say this trust should be liquidated immediately and put back in the pension fund. I don't know that they're willing to take our advice, but maybe we could ask each member that question on both sides of the aisle and find out what they think.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, the reason you buy insurance, the reason any reasonable person buys insurance is because they believe they have a need for the coverage. So it's obvious to me that the only reason that the trustees of the Minneapolis Teacher Retirement Fund took out a breach of fiduciary responsibility policy is because they obviously thought that they had breached their fiduciary responsibility. Duh. So, come on, folks. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what's going on here. So they're about to be dissolved, but they realize that legally they still have a fiduciary responsibility for their actions that have occurred over the last several years. So what do? To protect themselves, they go out and they buy an insurance policy to CYA. And that's why you buy insurance. If you don't own a home, you don't buy homeowners insurance. So, as I said, we can go around the parade ground, Mr. Chairman. The reality of the situation is that the legislature, even if we were in session, we have no authority by which to change what's going on here. This is for the judicial branch of government to go hash out for a while. My colleague, Representative Mulery, do we have legislative authority to do something?
Mr. Chairman, I've asked some of the research to look into that. I think we do.
Okay.
Let's get on with legislation.
With the bill side, Mr. Shepherd could whip up something for us in a handwritten form, perhaps. One thing I would suggest is I didn't know that there was an extra 3 years of insurance put on until about an hour ago. So I think, you know, I know it's frustrating for members to listen to this, but we can't just punt the football all the time on this. I think it's a necessary thing that we need to do. Representative Mulery, and then we're going to move on. Then Mr. Heffelfinger, come on.
I just wondered, just to clarify, it came up about the 6 years. What you said, they got a 3-year tail. Is there something for the other 3 years up to the six, or
Mr.
Thompson,
Mr. Seifert, Representative Mulery? No, I don't know. In the insurance agreement, it says they can get coverage for, you know, at least 3 years, and then it's sort of open-ended. In the cost that were provided by the state auditor, that's for an additional 3-year tail coverage. There's been some discussions whether, you know, they want 6 or 3, and whether what the exact number is, I don't know. You know, maybe 6 years is about the same price. I'm not an insurance expert, but that figure there, the $156,000, is for additional 3-year tail coverage after the 2007 date.
And just to clarify, is there something, I'm just trying to find out, is there a difference, is the statute 3 years on indemnification of officers or something, or is there, I mean, on suits against officers, or is it a 6 year, or
Chairman
thought it was, and is there someplace stated that they're going to, is there some other money coming out for that coverage the other 3 years later or something?
Mr. Thompson.
Chairman Siebert, Representative Mulray. I think it, you know, my only speculation is tied to the different statute of limitations for different causes of action. You should address that question to the Attorney General or the fund.
Okay, let's thank you very much, TRA folks. Karen Kilberg, Executive Director of Minneapolis Sutra Retirement, Harry Hainsworth, the liquidation trustee, and Mr. Heffelfinger, the attorney for the trust or the Minneapolis folks. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Heffelfinger. I am with Best and Planning and Law Firm in Minneapolis, and I am the attorney for the liquidating trustee, Harry Hainsworth. Mr. Hainsworth is present, but we have decided that it would be best if I try to address some of your questions, some of which I will try to anticipate in my prepared remarks, some of which I will await your questions. First of all, let me clarify a couple things. Mr. Hainsworth and I are independent, both trustee and counsel, from MTRFA, which is why I suggested MTRFA not share the podium with me at this time. We were retained by MTRFA's pursuant to the liquidating trust agreement. I thought at that point that would lead into my attempting to clarify a couple of points from Auditor Anderson's timeline that may not be exactly accurate or that I could complete that nobody appears to be aware of here. First of all, the liquidating trust agreement was signed by the was approved by the board of directors of the MTRFA and signed by the chairman of that board on May 18th before 354-70 was passed by the legislature. It was signed by Mr. Hainsworth, who was out of town in Maryland on May 22nd, hence the reason there was a four-day delay. So in effect, the liquidating trust agreement was agreed upon on May 18th. I was retained by Mr. Hainsworth sometime thereafter. On the timeline that Auditor Anderson laid out, there are a couple of things that are very important to your full understanding of this matter. She correctly pointed out that the liquidating trustee and the MTRFA filed a declaratory judgment action in Hennepin County roughly the 21st of June. However, what's not clear in there is that that action in filing a declaratory action motion was caused by a draft complaint being delivered to me by the Attorney General's office on June 8th, threatening litigation against the liquidating trust and the MTRFA based on claims that the liquidating trust exceeded the authority of the MTRFA board and the liquidating trust was therefore illegal. And I do appreciate Representative Solberg's caution about using the word illegal in discussing this liquidating trust, because that issue is at the heart of counterclaims brought by the Attorney General on behalf of the TRA, which was filed, I believe, later in the week of the 21st of June. And it was those counterclaims that generated the temporary restraining order motion that was brought by the state before Judge Crump in the Hennepin County District Court. And what nobody has mentioned here today is that Judge Crump has already ruled on the temporary restraining order. Monday afternoon of this week, June 26th, Judge Crump denied the state's motion for a temporary restraining order, and he denied the state's motion to change venue, and he set this matter on for a pretrial conference on August 16, 2006. And in his memorandum, which is particularly relevant to the issues that are of concern to this committee, Judge Crump addressed the proper standards for granting a TRO. One of the standards, one of the findings he made here is, and I'm quoting Judge Crump, granting the TRO will adversely affect the status quo of the relationship between the parties by making it more difficult for plaintiff MTRFA to carry out its activities to affect the merger with the TRA. He also went on to point out in his conclusion, Judge Crump, that the defendant state has not shown that it will suffer irreparable harm by the assets staying with the liquidating trustee. In his memorandum, Judge Crump noted that the assets that are the subject of our conversation here today are in a bank account, under any bank in Minneapolis, gathering interest and fully protected. And there's been no drawdown on those assets, and there cannot be from the trustee until July 1st. And then finally, as to whether or not this is an illegal trust, that argument was at the heart of the motion brought by the TRA. And yet, Judge Crump denied the TRO based on the following statement, that the defendant state has not shown a likelihood of success on the merits. So that is why this matter is still in litigation, and the way it is right now is on a track towards a trial later in the year. Although, as I will describe it towards the end of my testimony, we hope to avoid that. Like you, the trustee here, Mr. Crump, and I believe that it is our responsibility, consistent with our roles as trustees, to preserve the corpus of this trust. And that, I think, is at the heart of what one needs to recognize here. This is a trust, and the fiduciary duty of the trustee is to preserve the corpus of that trust, which is $1.5 million currently sitting in a bank account. Let me address at the heart of this trust. The liquidating trust was established for three reasons. First of all, to facilitate the transition between the MTRFA and the TRA. I will give you backup. I'll give you further reasoning for each of these. Second was to preserve the assets of the trust. And the third reason was to prevent or address legal claims that may survive the demise of the MTRFA. First of all, the need for someone or some entity to assist in an orderly transition was caused by two factors. The first factor is the 30-day transition period provided for in the legislation 354.70. That 30-day period is a difficult transition period. As Ms. Hacking properly pointed out, both the TRA and the MTRFA have been working diligently for the last month to try to bring this transition to an orderly fruition. But as Mr. Thompson said to a meeting of the teachers union on June 12th, glitches in the transition are inevitable. And therefore, someone to be in position to represent the MTRFA afterwards, or the interests of the MTRFA who is now in demise, post June 30th is necessary. The size of this transition is very, very significant. 13,000 members, over $700,000 in trust assets. The two organizations are based on different systems, different statutory systems, different accounting systems, different definitions. And more importantly, the time issue of 30 days. When this statute was originally being debated by the legislature early in the session, it was intended that the transition period and that the procedures for a transition would be pursuant to 353A.40 and the sections that follow thereafter. And if one looks at the cumulative effect of 358.40, typically a transition period for a transition of this scope would run in the range of 12 to 18 months. And that is why Ms. Kilberg's contract, for example, was extended in March when the legislation was consistent with 353A.40 and provided for a transition date of June 30th, 2007. It's consistent with that, and I think it's necessary for you to look at the history of transitions of public employee pension funds in the state of Minnesota. The most recent public employee transition that I've been able to identify is the PERA transition of police and fire into PERA some years ago. Now, that transition involved approximately 1,000 members and a significantly smaller amount of money than that we are dealing with here. and yet the transition period provided for in that transition was 4 months. And I must emphasize to you, had the legislature not shortened the period to 30 days, the need for a liquidating trust in this case would have been eliminated, if not minimized, if not eliminated entirely. The second reason why the liquidating trust is important for transition issues is that the liquidating, there's a conflict of laws issue here, where you have two different statutes that govern the MTRFA, but in the transition legislation, the legislature addressed only one. The MTRFA operates under both 354A, or operated, and under 317A. That's provided for in statute itself. 354A.021 Minnesota statute says each teacher's retirement fund association, and this relates to teachers' retirement fund associations in cities of the first class, which governs the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund. Each association shall be organized and governed pursuant to this chapter, 354A, and 317A. And yet the legislature, when it passed the bill, didn't even address 317A. And this creates, right on its face, transition issues. Because the corporation, the nonprofit corporation established under 317A, has obligations to its fiduciaries, its board, its employees. It also has obligations to its members. For example, under 317A, it is illegal for an association to disband and to transfer assets without a vote of the members, which is why one of the things that the MTRFA board spent a huge amount of time doing this month was to organize a meeting of the members in order to present resolutions for their vote to dissolve the MTRFA and to transfer the assets to the TRA as required by 354.70. But there is nowhere in legislation that addresses the disparities between 317A.521, which is the indemnification legislation, and the indemnification provided for in 354.70. And I'll come back to that in a moment. First of all, and the second reason why the liquidating trust was important was to preserve the assets. The trustee has a duty, Mr. Hainsworth has a duty, to preserve the corpus for the benefit of all trustees. And there are three trustees to this trust. There are three beneficiaries. The first is the MTRFA fiduciaries, and that is accurate. The second is the creditors, or people to whom the MTRFA owes obligations. And I will come back to how we've handled that in a moment. One of the challenges presented by a 30-day transition period is the difficulty in even identifying all of the entities to whom MTRFA may have a legal or debt obligation in that 30-day period. The third beneficiary is the TRA itself. Now, there was some discussion here, and I appreciate the auditor's term that we have somehow squirreled away money. So the fact is that the MTRFA for the last 30 days has been aggressively attempting to identify obligations that it owes, lawful debts, that either it can pay off in advance of the date of their demise, or we can save the TRA the obligation of having to pay them off after June 30th. And we did that at the request and suggestion of the Minnesota Attorney General. When we met with them on June 8th of this year in an attempt to address some of the concerns, some of which you've heard here today, from the MTRA, or the TRA, and from the State Attorney General and the State Auditor, the State Attorney General said, well, why don't you prepay those debts? And we have been doing that, and we have been keeping TRA informed. And the other reason we are paying a lot of debts right now is that those debts are being paid at the request of the TRA. The computer contract was referenced. We were recently requested, MTRFA board was requested to prepay the June rent or the July rent on the space of MTRFA. But it is extraordinarily important to recognize that the money that is saved the money that is saved by the prepayment of those funds, the $700,000 that you were concerned with, that is the money that belongs to the TRA. It hasn't been squirreled away other than in an interest-bearing savings account. It has not been squirreled away for the benefit of anybody other than TRA. And upon the dissolution of the liquidating trust and the payment of the obligations, that money will go to TRA as they are a beneficiary. The third reason for the liquidating trust is to prevent or address legal claims that may survive the demise of the MTRFA. And the first of those is obviously debts that are owed to outside creditors. We believe that by prepayment and by working with MTRFA that we've been able to minimize those obligations that might come to the liquidating trustee, which obviously works to the benefit of TRA. At the very least, we are working with TRA to ensure that that's happening. But it is important to understand that the liquidating trustee only has the obligation to pay lawful debts, debts that are properly incurred by MTRFA and in which a creditor has a right to demand payment. Indemnification. It is unfortunate, but a fact, that the temperature that surrounds this issue has tended to involve words that are ill-served when it comes to protecting the assets. Everybody in this room, including the liquidating trustee, has an obligation to preserve the corpus of these assets and to prevent, wherever possible, litigation, which, although not justified, is going to take costs to defend. The fact of the matter is that indemnification under 317A was an obligation established by law and a right that the MTRFA trustees have to rely upon. And 317A is different from the indemnification provided for in the legislation here. Let me read the language as you passed it, if I can. The indemnification language read, the Teachers Retirement Association, this is in your legislation 354.70, subdivision 5B4. The TRA shall indemnify any former fiduciary of the MTRFA consistent with the provisions of Public Pension Fiduciary Responsibility Act 356A.11. But there are differences between those two laws that are significant as to the rights of the fiduciaries that the liquidating trust has been established to protect. The first interest is, first of all, the legislation merely says the TRA shall apply that statute. It doesn't say that they shall indemnify. 356A11 is a discretionary indemnification statute, giving the TRA the discretion of whether or not to indemnify. 356A.11 does not advance legal fees or the cost of defense, which even in an ill-advised lawsuit can be significant, just the cost of defense. 317A, under which MTRFA was incorporated, 317A.521 is a mandatory mandatory indemnification statute, which requires the advancement of legal fees and costs of defense. This is a significant difference, one that the liquidating trust addresses that difference. The statute does not. And that conflict of laws issue, absent a liquidating trust, would survive the demise of the MTRFA. As I indicated, these challenges that have been arisen, and I should say that from the very beginning when Mr. Haynesworth and I went to visit the state auditor and the TRA and the attorney general on June 1st, immediately after we were retained, we wanted to lay out for them exactly what we were doing in our roles as trustee. We did that. They raised some issues at that time, and they raised issues thereafter, all of those entities. But that generated a series of meetings, which Ms. Hackney's properly alluded to, because that were convened by the Attorney General, at which we participated, and a couple of those, MTRFA, participated. And it has been, from the beginning of June, and the intent of the liquidating trustee to address the issues raised by the TRA and the auditor and the Attorney General in order to facilitate a smooth transition between these two funds, to preserve the assets. And it became clear after the Attorney General delivered his draft complaint to us that we were going to need the intervention of the court, which is why Judge Crump was asked to rule on a TRO and ruled as I indicated. But throughout that period of time and up until today, there has been ongoing discussions between the Attorney General's office and my office in consultation with MTRFA lawyers, with an eye towards developing a settlement that would address both the interests of the liquidating trust and the interests of the state of Minnesota. And although we do not have a signed document yet, it is clear as of this afternoon when I left to come over here that an agreement in principle has been reached. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have problems, because you know how lawyers can fight over I's, T's, periods, and the like. But there has been a meeting of the minds on how the role of the liquidating trustee and the obligations that he has as a trustee can be met through a settlement with the state of Minnesota that will address issues of common concern.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Helfelfinger. We appreciate your service as U.S. Attorney, by the way.
Thank you.
Very distinguished. Questions for Mr. Helfelfinger, Representative Mullery?
Thank you. You said the trust was drafted on May before May 18th, obviously, and signed. Then who drafted the trust?
Mr. Helfelfinger. Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery. I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that, sir. I was retained roughly the 27th or 28th of May, and I don't know what happened and how the lawyers for MTRFA divided up that responsibility.
Mr. Chairman, just continuing.
Chairman, Mr. Buttergrout and I, Mr. Buttergrout, drafted the trust.
Thank you, sir.
Can we come up and just identify yourself for the tape so we have it if we have a request for transcripts later, we have to have your name and position on the record. Thank you.
My name is Bob Butterbolt, Mr. Chair, and I'm one of the lawyers for the MTRFA.
My name is Barry Lazarus. I'm with a firm by the name of Moss and Barnett. I am also one of the attorneys engaged by MTRFA.
Mr. Chairman, can we ask?
Are you gentlemen available for questions for Representative Mullery and committee members? Okay, thank you. Have a seat. Representative Mullery.
When were these discussions regarding a trust started?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, my name is Bob Butterbrot again. The MTRFA Board of Trustees first started talking about the concept of a liquidating trust a year before the passage of the legislation. It wasn't until after the came about because of the press releases and the articles in the newspaper in April that serious work went into drafting an instrument of trust, when it was apparent to the MTRFA board that the time for the merger had been foreshortened from ending on June 30th, 2007, and rather ending on June 30th, 2006. And so the concern there was not just with the time frame being foreshortened, but a lot of these other issues that developed in the course of that April, early May time frame, when there were a lot of statements and allegations in circulation that caused the trustees to worry about their liability.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, the issue of the you're claiming that this was needed because of the difference in indemnification statutes. Was that issue ever... First of all, I'm told, is it not correct, that MTRFA drafted the proposal for the bill?
I don't...
They may not have actually drafted the bill, but they drafted the proposals for the bill. That's my understanding.
Anyone have an answer for that one?
Mr. Chair, representing Mallory, I have no knowledge whatsoever that MTRFA had its pen in the ink in drafting the bill. I certainly had no role in drafting the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know who to ask, but I was told when we were discussing terms of it that they were drafted by MTRFA. So I'm trying to find out if there was a problem with indemnification. Was this ever raised to TRA or any legislator? There were quite a few legislators in working extremely heavy on this. Was this, since we're talking about a year that this was contemplated, and we know that they were in negotiations with both legislators and TRA for much longer than a year, was this ever raised to anybody in legislature or to TRA?
Either the gentleman that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Mallory, I was not asked to advise or participate in the actual negotiations between MTRFA and TRA and others as this legislation was working its way through the process. As you know, there's been merger legislation proposed for several years. Indemnification has always been a concern of the MTRFA, and there was understanding on the part of the executive director and the board of trustees of the difference between the indemnification provided under the Nonprofit Corporation Act and the indemnification provided under Chapter 356A. I would simply say this, that the issue of indemnification became hot, if you will, after the April public statements and press releases and newspaper articles that were accusing the board of fleecing the taxpayers' coffers and other wrongdoing. Then it became a very imperative concern of the Board of Trustees to look to their protection under the statute. And that is when the liquidating trust was talked about in earnest and put together as an instrument, as a tool to resolve the issues of indemnification, the handling of creditors that might survive the demise of MTRFA, and all the related issues. And the urgency was also driven by the foreshortening of the time for the merger that was provided in the fourth engrossment of the merger legislation. So that's the best answer I can give you of how the indemnification issue evolved.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
can I add to that? It was after State Auditor Anderson's basic public statement through press release and in the paper where the Board of Trustees and the Executive Director believed they were going to be sued by the state of Minnesota. With statements such as Mr. Butterbrow just related, and the statements that you've probably all read, either in the St. Paul or Minneapolis papers or in the press releases, the leads of the state auditor. And at that point, the liquidating trust, as a measure of protection, as explained by Mr. Heffelfinger, and the indemnification and the expenses that are lawful expenses of MPRFA came into question, and I know that there were discussions between Ms. Kilbert and maybe even some of you or Ms. Hacking, but basically on the indemnification issue, it was my understanding that Ms. Kilbert was told you don't get any different indemnification than anybody else under the pension plans.
The problem, of course, was that nobody seemed to consider that for 97 years, MPRFA has operated as a nonprofit corporation. And if you read the two statutes, they're not irreconcilable. In fact, they're consistent. 317A is a governance statute. 354 is a pension statute with technical rules. And MPRFA was concerned if they simply turn over the assets without a vote, it, their own members could be bringing an action against the Board of Trustees and the Executive Director for failure to abide by the rules under 317A. It was a conundrum. And I will tell you that we talked to the Attorney General with representatives of PRA there, and we tried to resolve what is apparently a very legitimate, honest dispute, because the statute, as written, simply wasn't complete enough to address the issues that relate to 317A. And we sought guidance from the court. That's why we commenced the declaratory judgment action. I will tell you that I think the negotiations have been conducted in good faith, and I think that we are close, as Mr. Heffelfinger said, to a resolution of this, which will satisfy PRA. No one is trying to squire away any money, to hide any money. The MPRFA purposely had an independent entity evaluate what were expenses they would face, but we also believed, as long as PRA and the Attorney General took the position that the indemnification rights under 317A, 0.521, I happen to have the statute here if you'd like to see it, it's in one of my, you know, the book, which is significantly better from the standpoint of a trustee, and remember, these are trustees who are teachers, they are non-paid, and they sit on this board voluntarily, and for them to now face the statements of the state auditor challenging their veracity, their ethics, their ability, and threatening a lawsuit, anybody here would do the same thing they did. They wanted to make sure they were indemnified. And so, 317A-521 was the request of Minneapolis Teachers Board of Trustees and the Executive Director to be the standard for indemnification, because under the pension law, I think you quoted it, it says, as they may deem advisable, is discretionary. So the board of PRA, if they chose not to exercise that discretion, would not provide indemnification, and moreover, the pension indemnification doesn't include costs and expenses, which are horrific. As Representative Prickey points out, that lawyers are expensive, and I'm sorry for it. But it was a necessity for them to be able to be covered the same way they would have expected to be covered while all these different trustees sat there for 97 years.
It Representative Krenke had it to that point, and then back to Representative Mulley, and we need to move on. The sand is running out of the hourglass. So.
Thank goodness. Mr. Chairman, these gentlemen make a propelling case here for this sudden change of legislative action to make the merger time frame compressed from what might be 12 or 18 months down to a shortened time frame. Any of you gentlemen care to tell me how many years there's been formal discussion between the Minneapolis Teachers Fund and TRA about merger? How many years are there formal discussions between these two entities about merger?
Representative Mulley, you want to take a shot at that?
It's pretty close to 15.
Yeah.
That's
so
rough.
Just 10, 15 years. So for the idea that all of a sudden all of these things came up on the horizon like a thunderstorm on the prairie, in my view, again, I'm sorry, gentlemen, is ludicrous. If these two people, or these two entities, after 5, 10, 15 years, couldn't figure out how this was going to happen, because we knew sooner or later, though some of us would have preferred sooner or later it was going to happen, and then, my God, all of a sudden it came down to the last month, and all these things came up that we never anticipated were going to occur, and by gosh, this is going to take extended time, and all we know is it's taking extended money.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krenke, you've discussed the history But even in that history, there was a lot of finger-pointing going on as to why this fund was underwater. And you go back 20 years, as I understand it, when the legislature decided that the state would undertake the funding responsibility for these trusts.
31.
30 years, okay. Well, it's a long time. A lot longer than I've been representing the liquidating trust, let me tell you that. But it would be unreasonable to believe that although there may have been discussions about a solution to this problem, that the discussions would have gotten down to the details such as how can we make our computer systems reconcilable, such as how can we reconcile the indemnification issues. And it is the details which have generated the difficulty in the 30-day period. I continue to believe and will continue to testify that had the legislature left this in a 12-month, June 30th, 07 date, these issues would not have risen to the level they are now, and we wouldn't be meeting here today, and I wouldn't be generating legal fees.
And I also suggest, had the state auditor not made her provocative comments, we may not be here today. But once you're threatened, only a fool sits by and lets the result of a threat actually happened.
Well, if we want to revisionist history, in my view, although it be very recent review of these issues, because I've only been here 16 years, the legislature screwed up when they didn't put the cities of the first class in TRA to start with. So that's where the problem was, is to allow the cities of the first class to have their own funds.
They existed before TRA.
It doesn't matter. Lots of things existed before. So we're here to put them together and make sure they work.
We're going to be real quick. We have Representative Pepin and then the Attorney General, and then we're out of here. Real quick comment.
Let me just explain the reason for tail coverage. The dilemma facing MPRFA and the Board of Trustees and the Executive Director is this. If there's no claim actually made within the 30 days, when the policy would end by its terms, because every year MPRFA has purchased fiduciary coverage, every time there's an audit, the state auditor is well aware that there's been fiduciary coverage, no one has ever questioned that expense. The problem is, if it's not made within that time period, there's no coverage. So by buying tail coverage, you're getting the coverage you had in the policy after the policy no longer is in force. That would happen, I believe, in an occurrence policy, but it doesn't a claims made policy. And a claims made policy without tail coverage means that the day the policy ends, you're done. And because there was uncertainty about whether or not Minnesota statute 517A521 would apply, or the other indemnity, which is discretionary, it is prudent both for the trustees and for the state to have the benefit of this tail coverage. Should there be a claim made?
Representative Pepin first, then Mallory, and then the Attorney General's office. Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not exactly who these questions should go to. I just have a couple of questions, and part of it is the question that was, I believe, unanswered from a question that Representative Mallory answered earlier. I'm very confused, as it sounds to me like the discussions for this trust were signed on May 18th and discussed for over a year, and I'm wondering, as a legislator on this committee, why none of us heard about this? Why nobody in the legislature heard about this when we voted on in committee or when we voted on the House floor or the Senate floor? This wasn't discussed, this $1.5 million. And then the other question I have is, you know, we've heard a lot about the time period being moved up and it was sprung on us and, you know, it's the auditor's fault for doing this. That passed on April 11th. So my question would be, why between April 11th and May 20th, when this passed, why didn't we have any testimony from anyone, from my recollection, saying that this problem was going to be such a problem that we're going to have to set up this special trust? To me, it seems like there's an awful lot of time where there could have been more communication, and maybe it skipped me, maybe some of the other members got communication on the problems that this is going to create. But to me, this whole thing looks very like a surreptitious little method of fleecing the taxpayers. I'm sorry, I agree with Representative Krinke on this, and I would like to know why none of the legislators were told about this fund when it's clearly been in discussion for more than a year.
If the governor didn't sign the bill, there is no liquidating trust. I think you've been trying to do this, as Representative Krinke has said, for a long time, and it's taken a long time to get to the point where it finally was passed by the legislature. but there was no assurance the governor was going to sign it. So until the governor actually creates the legislation making it official law, there's no need for liquidating trust.
So we could have heard about it before?
We could have had a little FYI memo on it.
We call him Governor Vito. He vetoed so many bills.
Yeah, not really.
Well, it was Mr. Chairman, this really gets them. Did you ever see the bill, either of you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulry, yes, I saw all the engrossments of the bill. I was quite familiar with the bill, and my understanding, at least until April 10th, was that the form of the bill that was likely to pass was the form which left the MTRFA corporate entity would survive the merger. It would cease to exist as a pension fund as of June 30th, 2006, but it would continue as a operating entity for purposes of transition until June 30th of 2007, at which time the corporate entity would have the option to continue as a social club or some other type of corporation, but it would have no pension functions.
But, Mr. Chairman, that became obvious Chairman Seifert's committee that was not the intent of the legislature this year when we specifically put on the language changing that. So that was when, April something? Mid-April or early April 7th? 11th? Okay. From April 11th on, it was known that that was going to happen, and there was a lot of negotiations going on over indemnification language, and yet, if Luther's still here, he was talking to him all the time, and maybe we can ask him again if he was ever told it. I was never told it, and I was kind of the lead on the issue on this indemnification, talking to them, and Luther was constantly doing that. Never once was it mentioned. And are you taking the position that we can't limit you to 354A11, or are you're arguing apparently that we can't do that? It would seem to me the specific for this the general rule would apply, that the specific overrules the general, and that 354A11, you seem to be saying we can't limit, we don't have authority to enact laws like we normally do?
Representative Mulry, you have very adeptly touched on the very heart of the controversy, the conflict between 317A and 354.70 is that issue. And the position of the MTRFA has been that the fiduciaries are entitled to mandatory indemnification under 317A.521. by law, and that law cannot be modified. If it is modified by the legislature, it may constitute an unconstitutional impairment of contract. Now, we don't want this law to be declared unconstitutional because we want the merger to go forward and have been cooperating with it all along, and it is happening. It will happen tomorrow. That's the issue.
That's interesting. I think this is a real interesting proposal. They're saying that they think they could declare the law unconstitutional. Do they want to do that then and get rid of the merger? That seems to be what you're alleging.
I just said, Representative Mueller, we certainly don't want that to happen. But that is the controversy, and that's why we have gone to the district court to ask for a declaratory judgment that the establishment of the liquidating trust was proper, and it is a proper instrument to resolve the conflict between these laws. We believe that the laws can be read together and that they can be reconciled, and so that's why we had the meeting of the membership of the Teachers Fund to vote on the transfer of the assets and the dissolution. And I might just say, I wish that the members could have been at that special meeting, which was held on 19th June at Sanford Middle School, and could have seen the 30 or 40 teachers, mostly elderly, who went to the hall back of the auditorium to meet with the secretary of the meeting to revoke their proxies and ask for an individual ballot so that they could vote on what certainly we considered to be pretty much a foregone conclusion on the results. But those teachers, some, one of them in a wheelchair and one in a walker, wanted individual ballots, and they wanted their votes to count. It was a touching scene to, for this little democracy of the Minneapolis Teachers Fund to be ended. But it was ended in a good cause, because now their pensions will be safe, and the state of Minnesota and TRA will be handling their pensions good going forward, and probably, as in the sweep, broad sweep of history, there is very little justification, as Representative Klinke has pointed out, for separate first-class city freestanding retirement funds any longer. But for 97 years, it has carried out a valuable mission, and the teachers, I submit, have done a good faith job of trying to do their best to manage that fund.
Okay, we're going to call down the Attorney General's office. We are out of time with the number of minutes we've gone on, and we do have to have the Attorney General's office.
This is the decision. I didn't know there would be this many people.
Oh, thank you. That's fine. We'll make copies for the members. Thank you. Attorney General's office, thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. We appreciate it. Is there someone, Mr. Hatch or someone else? That's, thank you, Mr. Peterson, that could be here.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ken Peterson, Deputy Attorney General. With me is Rita DeMolais, who's been handling this case for the TRA. She'll be doing most of the testimony, but I just want to make it clear that our role in this has been, although we were named in the lawsuit brought by the Minneapolis teachers in terms of liquidated trust, that the Attorney General's office role in this has been to simply represent the TRA as any lawyer represents our client. They're the ones setting the policy. We're providing them the best legal advice that we know how to do.
Very good.
And that we're open for any questions you may have.
There's one question that's kind of come up here repeatedly in the last month, and that, in your opinion, is this liquidating trust legal or not legal?
Mr. Chairman, the Attorney General's answer and counterclaim to the Minneapolis Funds lawsuit asserted that the trust did not conform with provisions of Chapter 354 and 356A. Whether or not the trust would be legal or illegal would ultimately be a determination by a court. And in that respect, the only comment we wanted to mention was in response to Mr. Heffelfinger's comments regarding Judge Crump's TRO order. The state's TRO motion was denied. That sort of motion is extraordinary relief, and they are not unusual that a court would deny it. It would not preclude the state from moving forward on those claims, either in front of Judge Crump or in an appellate forum. But ultimately, as Mr. Heffelfinger pointed out, both sides are trying to get this resolved so that the trust is dissolved and the funds transfer. I agree with his point that there appears to be an agreement in principle, but there are significant issues that remain to be resolved.
Time frame on this agreement, anything probably before August, or
I think definitely before August, Mr. Chairman. Both sides again are committed actually to trying to get this resolved on an hourly basis, either today or tomorrow.
I don't want to seem overly theatrical about this, but it seems that there's a lot of shoes of impropriety that get dropped relating to this fund that just, they may not be outward and so forth, but just timing and questions of things, when they're happening, when we find out, who knows it and when, you know, can we have some assurance there's no more shoes are going to drop of surprise on legislators, so we can have some assurances that if something pops up, either Mr. Heffelfinger or you will at least let the committee members know if you find out something that we could be brought into the loop, since this was authorized by the legislature. Obviously, I didn't vote for it, and I'm really glad that I didn't now with some of these things that we hear about, but can you keep us abreast of these issues as you are working with Mr. Heffelfinger, with TRA, and with Minneapolis to give at least give us some comfort that we'll be kept abreast of these issues?
Mr. Chairman, before you steal the microphone, yes.
Peterson.
Okay. We will keep you the best we possibly can with the obvious, you know, practicality.
On behalf of the trustee, I'll make the same commitment. Our meeting, I have to go back a little bit of history, on June 1st, between Mr. Hainsworth and me and the entities I specified, was for the very purpose of trying to bring people up to speed. We realized that on June 1st that we had a lot of people we need to bring up to speed on that. And not the entire committee, I acknowledge, but the authors of the bill
were also informed, not in a meeting by me, but by others, of the existence of the trust shortly after the first. I will commit that we are using absolute diligence. My partner is working on that issue, isn't here, because he's back in Minneapolis working on that issue right now.
Once you come to a terms of agreement with the liquidating trust, for the AG's office or someone else, I think every member of the legislature would probably like a copy of what the agreement is, just so as our constituents are emailing and calling us that we can give them a good straight answer and say this has been resolved and here are the terms of the agreement.
We'll do the best we can to do that.
Okay, thank you. Members, questions? Representative De La Forest?
Well, I'll just have to say, Chairman Seifert, since you're wrapping this up here, right, I do appreciate it, first of all. And I'll tell you what I got out of this today, and I do appreciate you having the hearing once again. There's not a penny in this $1.5 million for the folks who have called me, like most of the people around this table. I represent retired Minneapolis teachers, a few of them, and they've called me. There's not one red cent in here for them. It's $1.5 million for others. I have trouble believing that things like a lease obligation is something that could have been assumed by TRA after the merger, $141,000, for example, or the $501,000 in professional fees. There's absolutely nothing in here. And so while the legal arguments certainly are helpful and productive, the bottom line for me is I came in here today to ask, what is this $1.5 million for, and how does it benefit my constituents, the ones who are retired Minneapolis teachers? And I have a clear answer today. The answer is zero. Representative Krenke was right that this is a golden shovel situation. You're wrong in one respect. It is a golden pipe situation with which taxpayers will be beaten for the next 30 years to the tune of about $18 million per year. And when I go back, Representative Mulley, and talk to the retired teachers who have called me, who know that I sit in this committee, I will tell them that the sad answer, for the even ones in the wheelchair as well, that there's not a penny in here. We can only hope that the damage is minimized and the majority, if not all, of the corpus of this trust is turned over to TRA immediately for its original bona fide purpose. That is for the benefit of the people we represent who gave years of service to the Minneapolis public schools. Thank you.
Representative Mulley?
Mr. Chairman, a couple of questions for the AG's office. One was, I can't remember the statute, I thought there was something about venue on plans had to go in District 2.
Under 354, venue of actions brought by or against TRA are required to be in Ramsey County. The Minneapolis Fund commenced the litigation in Hennepin County. Because of the very limited time before June 30th, we had essentially 10 days. The AG's office moved for a TRO and also moved to change venue to Ramsey County, the statutorily mandated venue, as well as the venue chosen by the trust agreement. Judge Crump denied that motion.
The venue?
Yes. And again, that would not preclude the state from seeking review of that denial at a different level, but the state's efforts at this point are concentrated on trying to resolve the matter.
Well, that's a, are you pursuing that? Because isn't that the Stanislaus case? It's very limited the time you have to pursue
the Stanislaus
that,
case, I believe, stands for the proposition that the party opposing the change of venue, which would be the Minneapolis Fund, has a limited time period.
Now, what would be your position where the fund adopted the law, in essence, is my understanding, and the law provided a specific indemnification, which I don't think, I think they can argue that they stand together. I think there's a conflict between the two on that. Can they adopt and approve the law, and I don't know if they have to even, but once they've approved it, are they not bound by that statute then?
Representative Mullery, I'm not sure
with,
I understand your
with
question.
Regard to the, there's, I think they say that they fit together, the two indemnification. I don't think so. I think they clearly don't fit together. And I think that the specific for the fund would prevail anyhow, but when it's in a specific law limited to that, is there any court decisions on this issue? Or it would seem to me that they would be the law merging gives them a specific indemnification. They're trying to argue they get something else, which I think clearly conflicts with that. Would they not, especially when they approve the law, why aren't they bound by that? Is there something that I've never heard of in, I won't say how many decades of practice, but I remember...
Representative Murray, those are the sort of the difficult and challenging issues that were cropping up on a daily basis, and with very limited time, again, the AG's office in conjunction with Terry elected to focus its efforts on trying to get the trust funds over to TRA. Those sorts of issues in terms of what the conflicts of laws are and whether which is specific and which is general, and at what point the Minneapolis Fund was bound by the legislation, were issues that would have to be pursued if there is not a settlement. But again, hopefully we hope to get this resolved.
Mr. Chairman, but how can you... Maybe AG has authority to abrogate our laws, but if we pass a law that says that specific indemnification applies, how can AG enter an agreement that says something that's actually contrary to that also applies?
Mr. Chairman, up there in Lowry, we have no intention of abrogating the law.
What's a relief, Representative Mallory?
Well, it seemed to me that I was hearing that they were going to enter an agreement on the rest of it and just let this go. And
any other questions, Representative Mallory, on this, sir?
He seems to be wanting.
I don't go into all the details of the ins and outs of the settlement discussions before this group. I can tell you that we have no intention of abrogating the law.
Okay. Any other questions for the Attorney General's office? Seeing none. Thank you for coming in. We did have Mr. Bicker and Mr. Martin available for any questions from members. Does anyone have a compelling question that we would really have to have?
I have one question.
Mr. Thompson, can you come back up just real briefly? We're going to try to wrap up in the next 90 seconds or so. Representative Mallory?
Sorry to bring you up again, but it's on since... you and I were talking about the indemnification, and you were talking to MTIFA about every day for, it seems like, for 2 weeks or more. But probably started before that. Did they ever mention to you that there was other, first let me clarify the one question. Who drafted the language originally in the bill on indemnification?
Mr. Thompson?
Chairman Seifert, Representative Mulray. Originally, Minneapolis had a bill, and it went to Senator Pogemiller. TRA was called into the process, and then that was for perhaps a closed system. TRA was brought into that. We had some ideas, and then we, in conjunction with Minneapolis, and we had discussions back and forth. Originally, Mr. Butterbroth was involved in those discussions. Certainly, you know, the executive director in Minneapolis, we forwarded materials back and forth so that any changes made, amendments made, were always shared. There was some discussion, I mean, you talk about the word may, shall, or must indemnify, and then in the 356A, that says that you may indemnify for a fiduciary breach. Normally, you know, you certainly always indemnify for all acts that were done in good faith. So, I mean, we thought that was satisfactory. Had you know, the issue of something in 317 came up, and I'm sure if they would have been if they would have really wanted to discuss it, we would have discussed it. But even at the last moment, the language there was never, they never objected any further, and we did not know about certainly the insurance or the liquidating trust or any of those things.
But follow up, they never objected to the language on indemnification, and they never mentioned 317A or
when we put in the language, we had a may. At first it was a must, then it was a may, and then they said, well, put in shall and we'll agree to that. We put in shall, that's what was in the bill that was passed. shall indemnify in accordance with 356.
Shall must mean the same thing according to Represent Khan, so I can see why they took that in the negotiations.
Trying to find out if
it's a good thing she's not here. We'll be here another hour.
I guess in response to the drafting of the bill, certainly both the Minneapolis Teacher Retirement Fund Association and TRA were jointly involved. Once we took the lead on it later on, but we shared amendments and any changes with both Karen Kilberg and Dave Johnson.
Thank you very much. Members, the meeting's adjourned.